your tears on my pillow that won't dry on their own beyond my ears. Step by step.
Everybody would like to make your way to your seats. We're about to get started. Good evening. How's everybody doing tonight? Good, eh? All right. Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. Try saying that five times fast. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name's Zach. And continuing off what we did last week, we're starting the meeting with a joke, so brace yourselves. Why did the accountant do so well in AA? Because he was already a friend of Bill's. No? All right, thank you. Thank you for laughing at that. Okay. Thanks for joining us tonight. Oh, my God. Okay. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a moment to get situated. We ask you please turn off any devices that make noise or might or will distract others. Phones, just turn them off, or we got a nice parking lot outside if you need to make an important call. We're going to take this time to let the craziness of the day kind of drift away and get connected to God, get our focus back so we can focus on the speaker in a minute here. So if everyone's ready and comfortable and situated, let's start our two-minute meditation.
Thank you.
I'm going to say the fog light prayer. If you don't know it, just repeat it after me. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light for those who are lost, sick, and dying, and find your love through me. Amen. From There is a Solution from the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. So the purpose of being in AA is to work the 12 steps, and the purpose of working the 12 steps is to have a spiritual experience. We thought that it's kind of important to know what one is, which is why we read spiritual experience in this meeting, and I've asked Jared to come on up here and read that for us.
Like I can't get away from this podium. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Jared. And the term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that our personality changes or religious experience must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life. And I'll read that again. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable and honestly in facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is a proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
Thank you. All right. Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so please turn your phones off or set them to airplane mode or silent if you have to have them on. And, you know, all bad AA jokes aside, I'm honored to be able to introduce somebody who has influenced me a lot, especially early on in my recovery. As we've said, you know, Joe leaves his heart up here at the podium every week when he speaks, and if you're just coming to this meeting for the first time or new to the fellowship, if you listen, I have no doubt you'll take something away from this talk he's about to give, no matter where you're at. And so without further ado, here's our speaker, Joe.
Oh, my goodness. Hi, everybody. Joe, alcoholic. I'm a member of the Wednesday night Big Book study group that meets on Wednesday night at 8 o'clock in Pompano. And that was started by a fellow that's sitting three rows back on the aisle seat by the name of John W. And he has been my mentor and my champion. and everything I know about life. I knew a dark side. You know, I knew a lot of dark stuff, and I knew a lot of ways not to become successful and productive. And but since I met him, I've learned a lot of things that have been profound. This, you know, they talk about that profound alteration in our reaction to life. And my goodness, it's like caterpillar to the butterfly type stuff. You've heard me say that before, but I mean, it's such a profound transformation in, you know, a state of mind that I came in here with that has completely changed. So I'm honored that he sits here tonight, and some other friends of mine that are sitting here. You know, and he had this manual he came out of, and it's this manual, and no other manual. And, you know, I think for an alcoholic and anybody that's addicted or has, you know, issues, you know, I never heard of that word before I got here, but that has issues and dilemmas in their life and trials and tribulations, you know, anybody can find value in working this process to take them from who they've become into who they can, into any possibility. And, you know, I've always felt that this whole deal was an opportunity given to those afflicted with alcoholism and substance abuse and addiction, those that were afflicted, that the affliction in and of itself has availed us the most special gift and priceless gift in life. And that's to become somebody new. You know, most of it, I don't know if you're anything like me, but I was always pretending to be somebody other than who I was. I always wanted to be who I thought you wanted me to be. I always wanted you to like me, you know, and pay attention to me and think highly of me and have this, you know, high opinion of me, and that I was intelligent and witty and good looking and, you know, and just popular and all this stuff. Because I didn't feel any of that. You know, I had, always felt awkward, and I've spoke about this. And my message is to those that feel lost, feel unfulfilled, you know, feel like you're at a place in life where you just don't know how to get where you want to go, and you really don't have that defined either. But you don't like being where you're at. You don't like being where you're at in your life at this particular time. That was me. And the worst part about that is pretending like you are. Like you are at a place where you think you ought to be and you know what you got to know and like you're all that. You know, and that's the worst thing in the world, to feel one way and pretend to be another. That is troubling. And, you know, I believe that God leads us all here so that we can really realize our potential, to realize why we were created, who we were created to be. Because I don't know if you're anything like me, I have been fabricating myself into somebody that I've always felt you needed to see. What's wrong with me? What's wrong with me the way I am? What's wrong with me with the faults that I have? With the insecurities that I have? With the handicaps I may have? What's wrong with that? Why do I always view me as so broken compared to you? And listen, come to Alcoholics Anonymous, we're all broken. But we come in comparing ourselves, don't we? So through our affliction, we've been given this program by our Creator simply to get us closer to Him and to become who He created us to be, to find what purpose He had in store for us. I didn't know what my destiny was. People would ask me my destiny. Destiny? You know what? The person I always thought I needed to be, and the destiny that I always felt I wanted to achieve was to satisfy those instincts. to get everything I could because I was sure that that's what you would look up to. And of course, I'd feel good. You know, so I was always chasing, always gaming, always manipulating, always trying to oversatisfy those instincts of character. And when I say those instincts, I'm talking about the things we address in the four-step inventory, the things that are central, the things that are in the middle column that our lives whirl around. I mean, there's, you know, at least for me, I was so consumed with satisfying those things, with being consumed with those things more than you, or, you know, if I had less than you, I was less than you. You know, if I had more than you, I was better than you. It's how I judged life and how I judged me. I had no moral compass. I had no, you know, meaning of what it was like to be authentic and be my heart to people and be a giver instead of a taker. I had no idea, right? So we come in here and we have an opportunity. We have such an unbelievable opportunity, not only to find out who we are, who we were created to be, but we get to find out what our purpose is, why we were put here, right? And what our legacy gets to be. I can tell you that many years ago, if I would have died, and if I could have envisioned myself at my own funeral, which I've done many times through exercises and other things, but I would have left such a life and trail of despair and disappointment and grief and sorrow. I don't know if anybody's ever asked themselves that question, but when I got here and I asked myself that question, and I was asked to ask myself that question, and to envision who would have been at my funeral, it would have been very, very dark and sad and despairing and grief-stricken. And the biggest thing I think probably would have been said at my service, as I envision everybody laying there in that casket and I'm there and they're there, is they would have been saying, "What a waste. What a waste. He was such a good guy. He had such a good heart. He had such good intentions. What a waste." Listen, there's a lot of people that have died through this deal that were unbelievably beautiful people and had potential beyond measure and had a purpose that are not here any longer. And I've asked myself that question. Why am I here? Why have I been spared? And I believe it's just to simply become a vessel for him. You know, my only hope, I mean, listen, it's a hope and a real prayer, because I know it doesn't happen. Maybe there's glimpses, but for people to see him in me, you know, I can't go around telling you how spiritual I am. What a crock of doo-doo that is. Or how humble I am. Like, what am I trying to sell people when I hear that? It troubles me. But who do you see? Am I working on who you see, not what you hear? Right? And this whole deal is so that we can affect other people simply by what we do. Right? I think about the person that's new in AA and coming into an AA meeting and so broken and so at the end, wondering why they even exist. What are they hearing? You know, my sponsor was adamant about, you know, what we talk about in an AA meeting. It's sacred. You know, it really is. This is a sacred place. This is where lives are changed. But you wouldn't know that by going to some meetings, right? You'd think it's like a casual social event that they talk about it, nothing but a bunch of crap. Not all. There's a reason we have the 12th tradition. And what that says to, what that says is that I check my principles at that door. I mean, I check my personalities at that door. And I come in here in principle, living the principles of this program. Hopefully, right? Am I honest? I'm a whole lot more honest than I used to be. I'm tempted to embellish a truth. I'm tempted to keep a truth, right? I mean, it's just a natural default for me. It's that thing. And you know, I talked about, you know, working on these defects of character as like, you know, you have a painted temple and you painted it and you paint it and it's beautiful and it's one color underneath, and like that's what I am. I am my defects of character, but they have been removed and silenced to the point of the opposite thing. In other words, I'm working on this person to become better than I've ever been, right? Every day I try to be a little bit better than I was yesterday, a little bit less selfish than I was yesterday, a little bit less self-centered. But every now and then things happen. You know, things happen and it's like, boom, and it chips the paint, and all of a sudden you see the other thing underneath, right? It can happen. You know, we've talked a lot about this thing. They say that the thing that's going to reach another alcoholic, an addict, is if I have the experience of depth and weight. Like if my experience is real and that person gets 100% that I've walked in their shoes, that it lands in their heart when I'm talking to them about the malady of alcoholism and the excitement of the solution, that they get it, right? It's all grounded in lack of power and power. It's all grounded in, I mean, the foundation for me is absolute knowledge, absolute certainty that I am powerless over alcohol and any other substance I put in my body. I'm powerless over it. And I don't need to believe that as a concept. I have a life. I have an experience. I have facts that bear that out. I don't have to hear another. I mean, it'd help. Maybe it'll help to hear another speaker so I can identify. But the truth is, if I read this information, I'm going to get everything I need to make a decision, to come to a conclusion that I am absolutely powerless over alcohol and stand in my own skin and not have any doubt about that, right? So from the moment I concede that to my innermost self, that I am truly powerless, that I can't stop or moderate when I start, when I ingest it, I am powerless, right? That leads me to the next proposal. And the question is, has anybody on planet Earth, any human power, been able to keep me stopped or relieve me of my alcoholism? Because when I'm saying relieve me of my alcoholism, that B, you know, ABCs of how it works, that no human power could have relieved me of my alcoholism, B, what I'm saying is that no human power has been able to keep me stopped. See, powerlessness is not just being able to stop. It's the most important part of recovery is to be able to stay stopped. And for that, I need power, right? So in the first few chapters, we're leading into a place where this whole thing is about seeking the power. And I'm going to make that decision in step three. The good news is that they already have the recipe in order to seek that power. Thank God I don't have to figure it out, right? So we make that decision to turn our will, which is our thoughts, and our lives, which is our actions, over to the care of God as I understand Him, as I don't understand Him, as I'm not sure. Whatever concept I have, whatever conception I have of God is enough for me to make a decision to seek. It doesn't have to be one that's profound or intelligent or knowledgeable or anything like that. The key is that the guy looking back at me in the mirror is not him. It's real simple, right? And when I make that decision, I start to seek. But I seek in a way that's contrary to the way I thought I was going to need to seek. See, I thought I was going to need to take care of out here because that's what I had been doing. But that produced utter failure. I always came into this program and I would come in and I would try to get everything situated. All my life figured out. Get the job, get the girl, get the money, get the car. And then I might work on those steps, but I never got to that point. I was putting the cart before the horse. I was putting my selfish and self-centered wants before my actual needs. I didn't know that. It was just ignorance, right? But they say, when I make that decision, that that decision would have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort, hard work at discovering the obstacles in my path, the things that lie in between me and having a relationship with God. What am I entrenched in that keeps me from having a channel that I can have with this Creator? Why can't I have this clear channel with God? Because I'm addicted to the world. Because I'm consumed with everything in it. And I'm consumed with getting it. I want my stuff. I want your stuff. I want everybody's stuff. And I'll do anything I can to get that stuff. Because I know it'll make me feel better. Well, what I find out is this. Is that the things that I've been chasing and the things I've been trying to put in my life were for a sense of ease and comfort. I didn't know that. I thought I was getting it to look good in your eyes. I thought I was getting it to be a one-up on you. So that you would look at me and you would judge me as that. Like I was my car. Or I was my hair. Or I was my clothes or my jewelry. Somehow, my identity came through that stuff when I thought of how you looked at me. Right? But I was really chasing a sense of ease and comfort. Silkworth says it right up front. And when I found booze, I found that ease and comfort. I was released from the bondage of being consumed with what you thought of me. So I kept chasing that. But when I make the decision based on the fact that I'm dying and I don't want to live life anymore and I'm sitting in my own skin wondering why am I even here? Based on that, I make this decision to seek the way they've got it lined up, right? And they say the first thing you're going to do is look within. You're not going to look without. You're going to look inside. And they look at your fears. You know, we look at our fears. We look at our resentments. We look at our harms to other people, the ghosts of the past, the sexual harms, all the stuff that I've been harboring on the inside, right? And I finally get to see what's in the way, what's been blocking me off from him. That man told me a long time ago that God couldn't live in a cesspool. That's how I felt on the inside. I did not have good thoughts on the inside at all. I was always scheming and scamming, right? So I had to do this inventory. I have to identify who it is I'm upset with, who has threatened me, who's tried to get something I have, right? Who's tried to work me and hurt me in my personal security, in my sexual security, in my financial security. What did they do to make me angry? What did it threaten? And what did I do to set the ball rolling, right? You can do an instantaneous four-step. You can process a four-step inventory anytime anybody threatens you during the day or night. Right? It doesn't take but a minute, and that's it. And then I get to see how it all works. Right? So this four-step inventory, this thing that we hope to incorporate the habit of taking inventory, checking myself, checking where I'm parked, checking my motives, checking what I'm chasing, all that, looking inside to see where I really am versus where he is in that whole thing, right? So I can maintain some balance. And if I'm out of balance and I'm chasing something that's really like twisting my mind or consuming my energy or, has me upset, I talk to somebody about it. It doesn't have to be my sponsor. Talk anything to get it from inside to outside so I can be liberated of it and at least get some feedback on it, right? So I'm going to read this to you because once we've identified why I'm angry and how I said and the part I played in it, and I talk to somebody about it, I can leave it go at that and have it happen over and over and over, identical, same thing happening over and over and over every day, or I can commit to changing it. I can become willing to have God remove that defect, whatever it is, whatever that defect is. It could be envy, it could be, you know, pride, it could be ego, it could be sloth, it could be gluttony, laziness, irresponsibility, it could be any of those things. Right? But I need to identify it so I can work on it and not have it happen again. Right? This whole thing is about becoming better, not worse. Right? Once I've committed to changing it, I have to partner with God in order to have him remove it, to help keep me conscious of it, to help keep me focused, to help keep me on it so I can remove it and incorporate a principle, a spiritual principle that will counter to that. So actually, what I'm doing is I'm dispelling selfish and self-centered principles and incorporating spiritual principles into my life, right? Because they give me a sense of ease and comfort. They make me feel better. They make me feel more productive. And they really get me closer to him, right? If I've hurt anybody, I need to make amends. Direct amends as soon as possible. You know, if something happens at work and somebody really, you know, makes me angry or does something to hurt me or says something to hurt me or hurt my feelings or, you know, challenge my emotional security or, you know, gossips about me, you know, my sexually or however, you know, and it hurts. But I've done something to have that even be brought about in the workspace. My behavior, the way I run my life and this and that and the other, why would it even be a topic of discussion if it wasn't evident at some point or other and somebody happens to see it and call me on it and I get angry, right? And I do something really devious and hurtful to that person. I'm not going to live to, it's going to own me until I take care of it, right? I got to set right the wrong, regardless of what they do. You know, they say it's a spiritual axiom that anytime there's something wrong or somebody harms me, there's something wrong with me also. Russell always talks about, why do I get so disturbed? Well, it's simply because I'm disturbable. You know, how is my internal condition going, right? Couple of things I want to read to you that I think are really important. You know, we're talking about Septen, right? That's what we're talking about. That's what I'm talking about. Inventory. Confession. Commitment to change. And asking God for help. And making amends where necessary. That is step 10. Step 10 is 4 through 9 all the time. They talk about this design, this new design, these things that I incorporate to become a different human being, to think from a different place, to be motivated by different things, to see things differently, to respond differently. I look the same. Not much has changed in my looks, but my whole character has changed. My personality changes as a result. I have this profound alteration in my reaction to life. People notice that. They see that. They get that, right? It says this on page 28. It says, we in turn sought the same escape with all the desperation of drowning men. Right? The escape from despair, addiction, alcoholism, wherever we're at when we get here. It says, what seemed at first as a flimsy reed, this thing called recovery, has proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God. A new life has been given us. Or if you're new, presented to us, right? If you prefer a design for living that really works. A new design. A new philosophy of life, a new worldview, a whole different thing. A complete conversion. The caterpillar to the butterfly, right? I like to think that it's really spelled out well on page 42. And it says this. They outlined the spiritual answer and the program of action which 100 of them had followed successfully. Though I had been only a nominal churchman, their proposals were not intellectually hard to swallow. But the program of action, though entirely sensible, was pretty drastic. It meant that I would have to throw several lifelong conceptions out the window. It's what I knew that was killing me. It was what I knew. It was how I knew how to have relationships. The selfish, superficial way I had relationships. You know, the what I thought I could get out of. You know, that whole come from on how I would interrelate, how I would relate with other people. You know? Everything had to be tore down and reconstructed in order for me to even know why it was important to have intimate, authentic, empowering relationships. Heart-to-heart relationships. Not head-to-head. You know? Not game-to-game. You know? I would get up in the morning. I would begin to script out how the whole day should go. How you should act, how I should act, what I was going to do, what I was going to acquire. You know, how I would respond if, you know, the whole nine. I'm walking around with a script in my hand how everybody should act and how the world should behave. The problem is everybody had their own script. And it was nothing but a battle, right? It's what they call the battle of the instincts. The battle of my wants with everybody else's battle, right? And there was no peace to that. There was no ease and no comfort to that, right? So this step 10 says this. It says this thought, and I'll read the thought. It says, you know, this is at the end of the promises. And it's asked if these are extravagant promises. I think they're pretty doggone extravagant, personally. Everybody says we think not, but the book even says that. But I think they're pretty cool for this alcoholic anyway. It says they're being filled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. Sometimes quickly, spiritual experience. Sometimes slowly, spiritual awakening. But they will always materialize if we work for them. We don't have to figure out how either. It's all written down. And it hasn't been changed in 80 plus years. This portion of the book. It says, this thought brought us to step 10, which suggests we continue, right? We continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. It says, we vigorously commenced this way of living as we cleaned up the past. So as we cleaned up the past, we start to incorporate this design into our everyday affairs, right? It says, we have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness, and they're leading into step 11. So that by this time, we have had what the 12th step is talking about. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, 4 through 9, I might add, right? And we, of course, we've got to make the decision to do that, right? We've had this profound alteration in our reaction to life. We've not only gotten right with God in steps 1 through 3, but we've gotten right with ourselves in 4, 5, and 6, and we've gotten right with other people in 8 and 9, right? We have cleaned out the wreckage of the past and cleaned that channel so that we can have unfettered contact and communication with Him. You You won't know what that feels like until you do this work. But when you do this work, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about when I tell you what they're talking about by entering the world of the Spirit is one profoundly different than anything I ever knew. I feel him. I don't believe in him anymore. I know he is. I know he lives in me, and I know he created me. And I know he wants nothing but the best for me. And I know that he wants me to want him most. He knows I'm going to want other stuff. He knows I still like stuff. I do. I like comfort. He just wants me to want him most. And I believe he wants me to invite him into all my thoughts and desires and concerns. I feel protected. I feel safe. I no longer am addicted or attached to what you think of me. Of course, I hope that I'm representing well, but I'm my own worst critic. Sometimes I think I'm a real jerk. But in spite of it all, I know he loves me unconditionally anyway. Because I want him most. I know that for me to be effective, I mean, let's face it, we're given an opportunity to help save lives here. That's awesome. When we were out there, did we ever think about saving somebody's life? Or giving somebody the opportunity to become whole? To feel forgiven? I feel forgiven. I feel connected. I feel safe. I feel empowered. I believe that's the world of the Spirit. See, I've been given access to this realm, this dimension that I never had access to because of my addiction to the world. See, man, big book says man can't serve two masters. My master was right here. And it's not anymore. I don't know if anybody's ever thought how it would feel to be just okay with what you got. And not be chasing anything. To have your worries minimized. That you know that if you continue to pray and you continue to ask and you continue to do the right thing and you continue to be responsible and accountable, disciplined and committed, that everything will work out just fine, because it does. It does. That's not the way I used to think. Where's the shortcut? How do I get around that? Well, if I go that way, I gotta lie, I gotta cheat, I gotta do all that stuff. And there are consequences for that, man. No wonder I stayed addicted and in misery for so long. I couldn't get out of that. I couldn't trust anybody that this was what it was. I heard people talk about it. But until I got to the point where I was ready for my last breath, I was so ready for it. This guy shows up. He was already there. I mean, we were put together. Amazing, amazing things. And listen to this, because, like I said, we don't got to make anything up. It's all here. It says our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. So now I've had this awakening. It's time to, Bill Wilson called this a spiritual kindergarten. So it's like, it's time for me to really grow in that area. And for me to really grow in that area, I've got to do things beyond what is in this book. My sponsor, Pat, my current sponsor, he talks about hitting a wall. We're going to hit a wall. We're going to hit walls, right? If I think yes, I'll grow to a great degree in this, But at some point, I got to kind of venture out. They even advise it. They suggest it. You know, the world's full of a treasure trove of books and godly material and things of that nature and ways to meditate and things that I can do. I mean, I go to church. I involve myself with people other than just AA. We come in here to get sober so we can have a life out there. So we can interact effectively out there. Right? Wouldn't it be a shame if we had to live in the cocoon of Alcoholics Anonymous just to survive? I mean, I love you guys, but come on, man. Listen to this. It says, we've entered the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. How do I continue to grow into the man that he created me to be? Day by day by day. Commitment, 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 right? Says this is not an overnight matter. So they're going to give me instructions, which I'm already familiar with, on how to make that happen. It says continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Where did I identify those things? Wasn't that when I did my four-step inventory? Didn't I look at my defects of character that was the driving force behind the actions I took to secure more of what I thought I needed from you and hurt you in the process? Yeah, that's where I saw it. Matter of fact, from those core defects come all the other defects. And fear is the chief. Fear is the chief. I lie because I'm scared. I lie because I think, you know, you're going to take something I got or I'm going to lose something I got. I already have, right? I'm inconsiderate because of fear. I'm selfish and self-centered because of fear. I'm lustful because of fear and envious because of fear and greedy and all this other stuff. So I got to continue to watch for that stuff. Where am I parked? What's going on with me? Am I disturbed? Why? Right? It says continue to do that, right? And I'll stay balanced. I'll stay connected and I'll keep from building more stuff that choked me off from him in the first place, right? Says, so I, in other words, continue to watch for this by doing step four, right? By incorporating the actions that I took in step four and inserted into this new design for living on what to monitor, right? When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. Where did I do that? Well, I identify my defects and become willing to have them removed in six, and I ask God to help me with that removal in seven. So they're saying incorporate six and seven too, right? And then it says, we discuss them with someone immediately. Well, I did my full discussion about all my stuff in step five. So they're saying to incorporate that, to liberate myself of the things that I'm harboring, I need to talk to somebody about it. It's exactly what we did in five, right? All of us felt relieved after five. We may not have had a major white light experience, but we started to feel something going on, right? It says we discuss them with somebody immediately and then make amends quickly if we've harmed anybody. So they're telling me that if I've entered the world of the Spirit and I've had this experience based on the work that I've done after I made my decision to turn my will and my life over to His care, this is His care. This is it. This is the care that was given to us. This is what I'm turning my will and my life over, my thoughts and my actions over to. I'm asking Him to be everything to me, to be in control. Right? I'm giving that to Him. And this is how we do it. Right? These are the instructions. And then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. So, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. And then it says this. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. Wow, we get our sanity back. Amazing. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. What that sounds like is only remembering what it did to us rather than what it did for us. That is a miracle. Because anytime we had the obsessive thoughts, we could only remember what it did for us. And we bought the lie. We created the lie. It says we react sanely and normally. Imagine that. Tell your parents that. Hey, you know, I know they'll say what John told me. We'll see. And it says we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That's the miracle of it. We're not fighting it. And neither are we avoiding temptation. It's a non-issue at this point. Now, I'm going to tell you, if it's still an issue, we still are walking around with untreated alcoholism, which means we're missing something. If I can't go to the freaking 7-Eleven, there's something wrong. You know? It says we feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. Right? We've not even sworn off. Instead, the problem's been removed. It doesn't exist for us. We're neither cocky nor we are afraid. What's to be cocky about when it's all gift? It was something we could never have produced on our own. Right? If we're cocky about this, losing it's probably in our future, right? It says that is our experience. That is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. Great. How do you do that? We know already. It says, continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with somebody immediately, and we make amends quickly if we've harmed anybody. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. That's how we stay in fit spiritual condition. See, I believe for me, that's the will of God for me to do that, to stay close to Him. And if I do all these things, I believe I'm doing what He put me on earth for in the first place. And that's to glorify Him, to show people what He can do. Not what I can do. I know what I can do. It ain't pretty. It says it's easy to let up on our spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. Laurels are those leafy things that they used to put on the heads of people when they would win races, and they were achievements. They were things that, you know, back in the Greek days when they ran the Olympics and all that stuff. Those are the, like, it's the achievement. So in other words, I get to this place and I start getting cocky and patting myself on the back. This is what happens. We're headed for trouble if we do. For alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. I'll always have the allergy to alcohol. Right? What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Maintenance doesn't mean getting to a certain place and leveling off. Anybody that maintains a very effective regimen at a gym, they don't stay the same. They grow. You with me? Maintaining something creates and facilitates growth. So if I continue to do 4 through 9 all the time, I will continue to gain and get better access and better relationship with Him. Because that's my desire, right? By this time, that is a desire. It says, every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all our affairs. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. It says, these are thoughts which must go with us constantly. Not like sporadically. They don't use words like that in here. They're very crystal clear about the direction that they give us, right? It says, we can exercise our willpower along this line All we wish, it's the proper use of the will. So whatever I'm doing, is it the good? Is it not only for my good, but is it for the good of all concerned? A good question for me to have. That man gave me that question, right? And then it leads me back to what they told us would happen if we did these things. They dangled a heck of a carrot here on page 25, I'm telling you. Says, when therefore we were approached by those with whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for us but to pick up the kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet, right here. It says, this is what happens when we incorporate this new design. It says, we have found much of heaven, and we've been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence, of which we had not even dreamed. The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards God, toward life, toward our fellows, and toward God's universe. The central fact, central to everything in my life, is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He's commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do for ourselves. If you're seriously alcoholic and drug addicted, as I was and as many of us were, we believe there's no middle of the road solution. Right? Next week we get to talk about continued growth, continued access, and ways and means and methods in order to get there. Thanks.
Can we get one more round of applause for Joe? That was awesome. Thank you. And now I believe we have Fred coming up here with our secretary's report. Please help me welcome him.
Good evening, everybody. Hi, my name is Fred, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seven tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I've asked Peter to read the recovery statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
Is Peter a recovered alcoholic? Recovered. We're not cured of alcoholism. Recovered but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we are cured, will we be able to drink responsibly? No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem, the alcoholic centers in the mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
'40 Big Book sponsorship. From the fourth to the second edition, Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sobered at once and remained that way, 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed out with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, and come to believe and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I have a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Is there anyone in need of a sponsor tonight? Please raise your hand. Please join us Monday nights. We have a Big Book study meeting on the third floor in the same building where the Big Book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30 and the meeting itself starts at 7:15. We have large print Big Book and Big Book dictionaries for sale. We meet every Thursday starting promptly at 8:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of bells. Thank you guys, and I'll see you next week.
We have tonight's podcast and all the other weeks online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I would also like to invite everybody to our Monday night big book study. We're in the middle of chapter 7, working with others. And for those who would like to thank tonight's speaker, please line up down the center aisle. We're going to have another moment of silence and then close with the Lord's Prayer in our seats. Who can bring us from shame to grace? Godspeed.
Stronger than getting on my zan, zan, zan. Oh, when you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you, baby, baby. Yes, when you're laughing, bah, 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 when you're laughing. Yes, the sun comes shining through. But when you're crying, you bring on the rain. So stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby. And I hope thank you.
Oh!